This is Talk Is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. Okay, while we wait for the first casualty of war and the women, children to stop being killed, I found some, like I try to do on this show, people doing something about something, people doing something positive, although albeit heroic and Quixote-esque. They may be chasing at windmills, but I think they're gonna win. So I went down to the bike for to the boilers demonstration. So the U of O has decided to go with the most fossil usage heating system that they can, and not worry about the price of electricity going up and the price of energy going up, and just staying the course and not spending the money to upgrade to an environmental system that the kids there just want it to be a regular environmental system, you know, regular, just one step towards an environmental system, a good environmental system. I would like them to heat the place with Angora rabbits. Myself, I think it should be, we should teach husbandry and just totally think outside. You're going to have to think outside the box, and if you want to be sustainable. But I just, as usual, I say rooftop solar, rooftop solar, rooftop solar, and I've gone down there and told them that they could easily do that. There's also a retrofit that other campuses are using that is about 50% less fossil fuel use. So that's what the students and the faculty and the community are asking them to do. I'm also saying that they should use half of their ticket sales to pay for academics, because think about it, without academics, there would be no team. The one came first. You could almost run the place. We had public funding for the U of O. They don't anymore, very little. But you could almost run the place without athletics. But you can't have athletics without the team. They would be reduced to being the Harlem Globetrotters, an exhibition team. If I understand this correctly, you guys know more about sports than I do. But without the academic program, I guess they would have to start their own league or join some other league, some professional league, is what Phil Knight and his friends would have to do. So we're asking the trustees. I went down there. After this is recorded, I'm going down there tomorrow to ask them to use half the ticket sales, because there should be nothing stopping them from doing that. You can't make a rule like that. How would there be a law or an agreement when one can't exist without the other? So there's that. And then, so also next week, the emergency physicians are being 35 emergency physicians are being fired over at River Bend. So they had a demonstration with about 200 people that you've probably heard on the news, but I have all the speeches that they did. So I'll be playing that next week. And I was just looking at it. It comes out almost exactly 50 minutes. So this one's a little shorter. But first, I have something for you. While I was out a couple weeks ago, out of town, went to New York, and went to New York on the comedy thing, trying to get the word out with using political comedy, because, you know, a lesson learned with laughter is a lesson learned forever. So I always pick up Financial Times, because they're one of the last good papers, independently owned papers, although that's constantly under threat. And so this article says it all, because I read a whole bunch of articles. I bought two or three different Financial Times during this whole Iran thing that I don't know. He's either going to end it real quick or use it to suspend the election, is my theory. But please research all this stuff yourself. So this is from the 7th. This is March 8th, 2026. Right, because it says page 7. Whatever. March 7th, March 8th of Financial Times. So what this is about a shipper. This guy will, you know, he's just like out of the movies. He'll just ship anything, weapons, oil. He doesn't care as long as you pay him. He'll get those weapons and that oil out of there, no matter how many people die because of his actions or whatever, you know. And so this guy's just hilarious. And you'll hear everything that you've been hearing on the news is all included in here. So Buccaneer risking his ships and crews in Strait of Hormuz. And you'll notice we don't know whether he pays his crew members. In this day and age, people are so desperate for jobs that we're wondering, me and the Financial Times here, are wondering if he actually, the extra money that he gets to ship this stuff, does he give it to his crew or does he just send them to their death, you know, and keep the money for himself? So we're not sure about that. But, you know, he has the right to do whatever he wants with the ocean and his ship. So this is Buccaneer risking his ships and crews in Strait of Hormuz by George. Oh, no, his name is George Procopio, shipping magnate. I'm looking for the byline here. Sorry about that, folks. But, Jamie John, Malcolm Moore, and Nassos Stylianou. So Financial Times from March 8th. As Iranian missiles streaked over the Strait of Hormuz last Sunday, bringing traffic across one of the world's most vital trade routes to a near halt, one Greek billionaire was steering his ship straight into the turmoil. Dynacom Tankers, owned by 79-year-old George Procopio, has sent at least five tankers through the narrow waterway at the mouth of the Gulf since the outbreak of war with Iran on Saturday, making it one of a handful of legal operators willing to brave the journey. Most owners have paused transit until things calm down, said one shipbroker. But there are a few buccaneers willing to take the risk. There are big rewards on offer. Freight rates for tankers leaving the Gulf have more than doubled, hitting record highs. A single so-called VLCC, or Very Large Crude Carrier, tanker making the perilous voyage across the strait and on to China would earn about $500,000 in revenue per day, excluding the cost of additional war risk insurance. According to price reporting agency Argus, while the risks for the owners are money and tankers, the sailors on board are putting their lives on the line. Iran has threatened to set any ships attempting to cross the passage, quote, on fire, hitting at least nine since the conflict began, with at least three seafarers killed. All of Dynacom's vessels turned off their transponders, devices that automatically transmit a vessel's location and identity, for their passage through the strait. Ship tracking data shows Dynacom's crude tanker Athena, which was in the region before the attacks, stopped transmitting early on Saturday evening, southeast of the waterway, before reappearing the following afternoon in the Gulf. The unladen vessel, which reached Bahrain's Sitra port on Monday and departed 2 days later with a cargo of oil. Born into a wealthy family in Athens in 1946, Procopio is among the latest generation of Greek ship owners who have long dominated the maritime trade. Described by a person close to him as unassuming and a workaholic, he is rarely seen without his trademark baseball cap, drives an old Mercedes SUV, and walks around without security, a rarity among Greece's ship-owning elite. Procopio spends most of the year on his mega-yacht, the 106.5-meter Dream, currently docked on the Athenian Riviera, and his expansive property portfolio has earned him the nickname the King of Real Estate in his home country. Last year, he bought a stake in the Four Seasons Astir Palace, the luxury hotel group's only Greek property, along with the adjoining Volegmeni Marina, which primarily serves mega-yachts. After buying his first ship in his mid-20s, Procopio built a huge fleet around the world, along with a reputation for taking risks. The Greek tycoon's three shipping companies have more than 150 vessels on the water, with roughly 85 more under construction, said a person familiar with the matter. He's an industry legend, and one of those people that does what we call premium business, said one shipbroker who has worked with Procopio's companies, using a euphemism for trades that are legal but carry much higher risks. Procopio's Dynacom tankers has moved tens of millions of barrels of Russian crude oil over the past year and is one of the biggest lifters of the cargo since Moscow launched its assault on Ukraine in early 2022. According to Financial Times analysis of Kepler data and ship ownership records, the billionaire stirred controversy in 2022 when, months after the outbreak of the war, he said that sanctions have never worked, although there is no suggestion he has ever breached them. Ukraine's National Agency on Corruption Prevention put Dynacom tankers on its list of international sponsors of war for its role shipping Russian crude, accusing it of replenishing the budget of the aggressor country and financing the Russian invasion. However, in 2023, it withdrew Dynacom from the list, and in 2024 withdrew the list altogether, following pressure from its overseas partners. Procopio had always acted within the law, the shipbroker said, and had complied with price caps and other Russian crude restrictions. But he added the billionaire's willingness to shift cargo that others might not was where he's made most of his margin. The billionaire's willingness to shift cargo that others might not was where he's made most of his margin. The International Transport Workers Federation, which represents crew members, has mandated bonus payments for those operating around the Strait of Hormuz since Monday that are meant to enforce a doubling of both salaries and death and disability benefits. Crew members can also refuse to sail with repatriation at company's cost and compensation equal to 2 months' basic wage. Okay, so the government is mandating that, but are they enforcing it? We don't know. Procopio and Dynacom tankers did not respond to a request for comment, including on whether they were making the additional payments to its crews. He represents a certain way of doing business. He represents a certain way of doing business, said Ed Finley. I'm sorry, this is just black comedy to me. I'm sorry. He represents a certain way of doing business, said Ed Finley Richardson, a shipping investor and founder of Contango Research. He's one of a cohort of 5 to 10 owners who really overshadow everyone else, not because of the size of their fleet, but also because they're willing to act boldly. Procopio has a reputation for honoring his contracts where others renege, but sending his ships through the strait while live fire continues on both sides represented a historic opportunity for the Greek billionaire, said Finley Richardson. He noted the risk of entering the Gulf with an empty ship was lower, and once there, quote, you are in the negotiating position to ask for the right price for the clear and present danger to your vessel and the crew and everything else. It's during these periods that the truly elite ship owners tend to distinguish themselves, he added, pointing to Greek tycoon Aristotle Onassis' willingness to risk German U-boat attacks in the Second World War and Norwegian magnate John Fredriksen's move to buy up contracts to ship oil by tanker during the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Charming. Is that a shipping? Do you think maybe that's a keystone in the globalization world? But please don't kill any heads of multinational corporations or shipping people. Please don't do that just because someone read an article on the radio. Summing up his approach in 2014, Procopio said, if you are not a risk taker, you are not in shipping. If you don't want the risks, you buy U.S. bonds. Which is a lot to be said for U.S. bonds right now. So, that's from Financial Times. I think that kind of sums up what's going on right now as I record this. So thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media. Coming up, Bike to the Boiler. And then next week should be, and I have about 6 weeks of stuff coming up here. Next week is the Eugene Emergency Physicians at River Bend. We need our emergency physicians. We don't need private equity in our healthcare. Thanks for listening. Check out the comedy open mics, too, at Slice on Mondays.
Come one, come all, hear the tale of University of Oregon's climate failures. Bye-bye. A rare edition, bye-bye. Thank you all for being here. I think we'll probably wait a little bit longer for some more friends to join us on two wheels. Two of them, put them up. Please. In the world. We have this beautiful petition, however, as we wait for our two-wheeled friends to make their way over. But maybe a little context, we are here, excitingly, in front of the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference. Shout out! Woo! We will be biking from here. Hello? Hello? Okay, still working. We'll be biking from here to the single largest source of pollution in the city of Eugene, that being the University of Oregon's heating system. Boo! University of Oregon, despite priding itself on its environmental image, continues to remain the largest single source of fossil fuel emissions in Eugene. But wait, luckily we, the students, workers, faculty members, and community, have the capacity to make a change. So, we're going to give it like 5 minutes. We'll get some speakers going. We'll get on two wheels. We'll go hang out and go see the boilers and City Hall. Thank you guys for being here. Come over if you're walking to Tykeson. If you're walking to Unthink, hang out. Come listen. Come learn about climate. And then, you know, hang out. We have bikes right now. I don't know. It's also vinyls, so go to your homework. Either way. But I'm really excited to start. I think you're going to have Jennifer Smith give a few remarks. And then Patty Hine from 350 Eugene. Jen, do you wanna shut it down? She's engaged in everything conversations. Do you wanna be good to speak now? Okay, cool. Okay, thank you so much. This is Jen, who is the president of our Classified Employees Union, SEIU, and we are so excited.
Thank you everyone for being here. Super fun riding bikes down here with you. I don't need to tell you why we're here. I know that climate justice is a value of all of ours. It's also a value of our community. It's a value of our university. It's a value of our city. It's a value of our state. And it's a value of our union, my union, SEIU 503, Local 085, represents 72,000 workers in the state of Oregon. And we, just like the university, has engaged in a values-based democratic process to hear from stakeholders, to let everyone, let their feelings be known, let their values be surfaced. And the overwhelming majority of not only people in our union, but in the city and at our university through democratic process have shown their values and repeatedly agreed that climate is a primary value of ours, and we're willing to have the economic trade-offs to let climate be more important, have goals that represent our values. And at first it seems like, wow, that's a lot of economic resources that have to be devoted to this climate transition. Well, now it looks like we would have been sociopathic to not have committed to our goals, both on our university, our city, and our union, our institutional levels, because look around now, it's like if we had started actual work on our action plans, we would be in much better shape as a community right now, not reliant on, you know, $5, $6 gas. So it just shows that we were ahead of the game. We've been national leaders on climate since 2010, university, since 2014 in the city, and then 2022 in our union, where we asked in our legislative body, our general counsel of our union, to divest from fossil fuels for our retirement and investment accounts. And so that can make a real difference. And yeah, it's hard, and yeah, our returns might be lower, in the short term, but this is, we're playing the long game with climate. And it really is, I wish we had started the long game back when we knew the climate crisis. We'd be in a lot better shape right now. And if we're not going to achieve our climate goals or even work towards our climate goals or even go backwards on our climate goals, that's sociopathic. That's against our values, not only in this room, but in our communities. We've overwhelmingly showed these are our values, and I demand that we stand by them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our speaker is not here. And so I think also I was just told that we are not permitted to be here. And given that, and what an exciting time we've had, I think maybe we can wrap it up, give ourselves all a round of applause. Thank you for coming out. Oh, and a call to action to finish things off. Those sheets, you can email your Board of Trustees members who are the ones who would vote to implement this project. But you can also come on Tuesday and give public comment. We have a testimony guide. It takes 2 minutes. You tell them, you guys are supposed to be reflecting my interests and the interests of our university. You've never done that. Also, why do you have $1 billion as an individual? So you could say basically, yeah. So and it's in that country if you get those sheets. So you guys again, no more amplified sound for these people. Cool.
The place to be. It's about that time to regulate University of Oregon's outside greenhouse gas emissions. I'm so excited to introduce Jack Dotson, who is a co-lead of Climate Justice League, who will be talking about the years of backsliding from our administration in regard to our campus's outsized impact on the community. Let's give it up for Jack.
Hello, everyone. Thank you all for coming. While I'm speaking, feel free to come up and sign our awesome Canvas petition. We're going to bring this to the Board of Trustees meeting on Tuesday and show how many people are in favor of climate action. Is this good? Yeah. Anyway, why are we here today? Unfortunately, the University of Oregon is the largest source of climate heating greenhouse gas emissions in all of Eugene. In fact, the heating system for campus is the largest stationary emitter within city limits. Can we get some booze? Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to give some background on why this is the case and how students have been pushing for action. So, everyone, close your eyes so I can set the scene. Imagine yourself in 2017. It was the first year of Trump's first term. The fight to stop the Jordan Cove pipeline was about to kick off. Shape of You by Ed Sheeran was the number one song.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not sure what you all were doing then. I was 12, so I wasn't doing a whole lot, but I know great things were happening. Because great things were happening on campus. Students were pushing for climate action from the university. In fact, 2017 was when the Climate Justice League started the Cap the Carbon campaign. The context for this was that in 2010, the university released its first climate action plan, which is awesome. Let's give hip hip hooray! Anyway, this was a great first step. The university committed to carbon neutrality by 2050, but it wasn't a super strong plan. They kind of targeted all the low-hanging fruit, like installing energy-efficient light bulbs on campus. So again, great first step, but by 2017, it was time for some real action. So one of the main targets of this student campaign was the campus heating system. This system is such an important target because it makes up 85% of the emissions from fossil fuels burned on campus, also known as Scope 1 emissions. It also makes up 46% of UO's total emissions, so that's including all of the emissions from like all the traveling our sports teams do, and people commuting to campus, and you know the electricity to turn on the lights in the buildings, all of that stuff, and the heating system is still half of the emissions. That's a huge deal.
Shame!
Basically, how this works It's on the other side of Franklin. There's a big boiler system that burns methane gas, which is a very potent fossil fuel. And they use that to heat the buildings across campus. But since this is one system, it means they can do a big infrastructural overhaul and significantly cut these emissions. Again, that's a lot easier said than done, but by overhauling this one system, they could theoretically eliminate half of their emissions. That's a huge deal. Woo. So, students were pushing for this to happen. And the combination of student efforts on campus and the global climate movement really picking up steam, in 2019, UO folded to the pressure and announced their second climate action plan.
What? Two climate action plans, no action.
Yeah. So the centerpiece of this plan was studying how, it kicked off a study about how they could cut these emissions from the heating system. Basically, they were going to, what they did is they hired an outside firm to come up with all the best options. And then they created a task force filled with students and faculty and administrators to make a recommendation. And then they were supposed to implement it. So the task force made their recommendation in February of 2024 and then presented to the board a month later. And this recommendation was for option 2B, which would replace one of the methane boilers with an electric one that was hooked up to the grid. This option, in all honesty, wasn't perfect. In fact, it was added later on in the process because UO wanted an option that was cheaper and cut emissions less, but it was still a huge deal. It would cut the heating system's emissions by 45%. So, setting the scene again, March of 2024, a rainy morning, 9 a.m., a bunch of people turned out to the Board of Trustees meeting to give public comment. The board was supposed to vote to implement this, and guess what? They didn't.
What?
Same. In fact, they've only brought this up at one meeting since then, which was a year and a half ago. They continue to delay action at every instance.
Shame.
And also, their main argument for why they can't do this is that they can't pay for it. And while this is kind of true, since they don't just have this money sitting around, it's only true because they've made it true. They delayed this project long enough that there isn't federal money that they could tap into for climate projects. They have never on their own tried to work with the state government to find a solution. And the only time this was even brought up in Salem was when we went up there and did their dirty work for them.
What?
They've also never tapped into their massive fundraising enterprise, which is ridiculous because so much of their branding revolves around sustainability. And frankly, I know there are plenty of alumni who would donate for climate action. It is ridiculous that UO constantly says that they don't have enough money to pay their workers or to cut their emissions, yet they always can pay for the new flashy project.
Same.
So, as the Climate Justice League, we've been working to, keep applying pressure and keep taking action. Unfortunately, a couple months ago, UO announced an even worse option. They cut a deal with our local utility to start a pilot project that would raise campus emissions by 65%. So after years of delaying climate action, they're trying to go in the opposite direction. And also, they did this behind closed doors with no transparency about the negative impacts of this pilot project and no option for any public input whatsoever. Can we get some more boos for that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where you all come in. The only way we're going to get UO to take strong action is if we apply a lot of pressure. We've done this in the past. That's how we got the first two climate action plans. But again, we have to apply so much pressure that it's better for UO to take action than to deal with the negative impact and the ridicule of not taking action. This climate action will happen eventually, but it needs to happen a lot faster if we want to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So please, when you go home today, tell your friends and family about this. Sign up to give public comment at the next Board of Trustees meeting, which is next Tuesday. And try to stay involved. This is so important. And again, we need everyone to make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jack. Give it up for Jack again. Oh my gosh. Speaker is still working. Okay. Next, I'm super excited to introduce Kate Mills, hi Kate. Dr. Mills, who is president of our faculty union on campus and also teaches about these issues we're speaking about. So excited to have her. Let's give a warm introduction.
Thank you for having me. My name is Kate Sellis Mills. I'm in the Department of Psychology. I'm a faculty member there, where I get to teach environmental psychology. It's very fun. And I'm also president of United Academics. The faculty union here. I am here to call on UO administrators and the Board of Trustees to actually be leaders. Like, they have failed to see the incredible capacity of this university to be a leader in environmental sustainability. Am I right? I mean, look at where we are. We are in the Willamette Valley that has such a deep, rich history of stewardship, of advocacy, and for fighting for environmental justice. Look across the street. Like, right now, we have the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference happening. And the fact that the university has failed to build from one of the strongest foundations in this nation to be the leader of a sustainable campus baffles me. It's shameful. It's a failure. It's frankly a failure of vision and of leadership that I see students taking up. I am incredibly grateful. I see every Board of Trustees meeting. I see you all advocating for the change that is completely possible, completely within the financial means of this university to enact, and you are taking on the leadership roles that we need to see at the higher levels of administration. So thank you. Can I get a big just round of applause for the students who are the leaders of this university? Actually, yeah, I could go on about how does the university not actually see how much strength we have in just the civic advocacy in the work that our students do and across domains, not just in environmental justice. I'm also here to let you know that faculty are behind you. We do not buy the false narrative that in order to actually enact some of these changes that faculty also were involved in trying to find the solutions for. We don't buy the false narrative that in order to do that, we would have to lose more personnel in this campus. So they have been apparently telling.
That's BS.
It's total bullshit. I know that faculty are behind these efforts. And again, I'm just this week on Wednesday, I went to a gathering of many faculty who were actually hired in the last couple of years as part of the Environment Initiative across different departments to, for the first time, meeting each other to talk about how we can work together to make this university what it can be, to be the leading university in environmental sustainability. We can do this. We are working together. We want to work with you in order to enact our shared vision for this university. So I see a wonderful path forward. I see leaders in all of you. I am incredibly grateful to be a faculty member of the students at this university. We are already like, you should also know that those faculty on Wednesday were talking like about how like lucky they feel to be here, to have been hired in the last years, because they're like, oh, I don't have to convince students that there is an issue. They are on board. They want to find the solutions and they want to enact them. And so just know that we are behind you, and I will be talking about this as well at the Board of Trustees meeting next week. So see you down at the boiler.
Thank you so much, Kate. Awesome. Okay, so this brings us to the biking section of the Bike on the Boilers. We'll be riding our bikes to the boilers. We will try and proceed in a relatively orderly fashion. We'll all be in the front and we'll direct like a stream and end up at the boilers. We'll have some speakers there. We'll have snacks at the end. We'll do a little last leg of the bike ride to City Hall. Wrap things up. We really appreciate you being here. It's high time the university does something about it, and this is an incredible show of force to see so many people out here advocating today. So thank you all.
and like you don't want no man. Building deep in the system. He was a body remover. I'll give you a dose, but it can never come close to the rage. Builds up inside of me. Fist in the air in the land of hypocrisy. Movements come and movements go. Leaders think movements cease when the heads get blown. Cause all these fucks, they got bullets in their heads. The prophets are police, the judges, the feds. Then what's it worth? Keep your people calm. They don't even have to change. When he spoke out of Vietnam, he turned the power to the have-nots. And they came to shock.
Profit for their reconstruction in order to survive. And that's not a system.
that changes every 4 years. It's a system that we have to break down generation after generation after generation after generation.
Thank you. Thank you. But it's really great to be here in Boston. This is the first time I've ever been here. I've heard so much about it. I hear you can get a really good cup of tea here. This is something from our new album, Drama. And it's called Into the Lens.
By the water's side.
He's gonna play for you.